Good morning. Now, before we get into that, let me ask you, has anybody made any mistakes this week? Hundreds. Yeah, I know. Yeah, we know that. But, you know, anybody else made any mistakes this week? Yeah. Do you know, I made a mistake yesterday in Morrison's. And in the shape of these hot cross buns. Well, this is the other packet. Has anybody brought any hot cross buns in Morrison's this week? Okay, have you eaten them yet? Yeah, okay. You know how you go in Morrison's and just inside the door there's those stands. Normally they have donuts on, that's what I was looking for. You know, donuts and cakes and treats and things. This week there was a stand with hot cross buns on, so I thought, great, that'd be good, hot cross buns. When Rocha gets back from her work course, we can sit down, have a cup of tea and hot cross bun. Well, we did that. Well, we had them after tea, actually. We did that, and Ethan started to complain when he got into his hot cross bun. Oh, what's the matter with you? Just get on with it. And I got into my hot cross bun, and I'm thinking, hang on a minute. Maybe there's a reason why he's complaining. Hannah got hold of the packet. And she read on here, four really hot cross buns. There's the clue. Four really hot cross buns with dried chilli. Why would you do that to a hot cross bun? Why? I have no idea. Hannah says, you should write to Morrison's and ask them what they think they're doing putting chilli in hot cross buns. Now, if you don't believe me, right, these knock your head off. I think I did finish mine, and I tried to persevere with another one that a child wasn't going to eat, but I gave up with that. Why would you do it? What's wrong with just normal, regular hot cross buns? Why do they need chilli in them? If anybody likes chilli, what did you say? Make them really hot. Yeah, but what? Make me cross. Yeah, they did. But we were all of us were struggling. I had a strawberry yogurt. That normally settles your mouth down again. That didn't work either. They were really hot. But you know, got me thinking yesterday evening about, you know, why would you do that? Why that whole thing? Why would you do that? Why would you add chilli into perfectly good hot cross buns? And if anybody wants these, you're welcome to them. They're here. We're not eating them. But why would you do that? Why would you change something when you don't need to? And we could look at that another way up. Why take something away from something that's perfectly good? That was something added, but it works the other way up, doesn't it, as well? Why would you do that? And wants to hold that in mind, not the chilli hot cross buns, but that thought about, why would you do that? Or why wouldn't you do that? Hold those thoughts in mind as we get into this morning. This is the next part in our teaching series, thinking about how we are invited by Jesus. And so far in the series, we've looked at three completely different situations, haven't we? Three sermons that have started with the title Come, where Jesus says to people, come, follow me. And we've thought about the responses, that instant response of those who Jesus invited to follow him, his first disciples. We've had Simon, Peter, James and John hearing the words of the invitation, responding straight away, leaving their nets behind, responding fully to Jesus. And then we looked at perhaps a contrasting view where Jesus invited three different men to come and follow him. And they were all hesitant, weren't they? And they paused and they thought about it. And they made excuses. They were going to follow, but first of all, they needed to go do something else. Well, why would you do that? Why be hesitant? Why make excuses? And then last week it was about people wanting to bring their children to Jesus for him to bless them, and the disciples getting in the way and Jesus removing the obstacles. Why would you do that? Why would you put obstacles in the way of somebody coming to know Jesus fully? So those three responses then, I want us to think about those for a moment. Just think about these three words that are on the screen. Positive, hesitant, obstructed. They're the kinds of responses we've been looking at in this series so far as people have been invited by Jesus to follow him. And let's pause here for a moment and think about this. How has your response been so far? How have you been responding to Jesus over these last few weeks? I'm not going to ask you to stop and turn to the person next to you to chat about this, but just pause for a moment and think about your response. I wonder, has your response been one that's had you fully there with Jesus? Your response has been, I'm right with you, Jesus. You lead, I'll follow. Nothing's ever going to change that. I'm right there with you. I wonder if that's been your positive response. Or has our response been a little bit more, hesitant, where we've kind of looked at Jesus and thought, well, yeah, okay, well, you wait there a minute and I'm just going to go off and do this thing. I'll be back with you in a minute. I kind of probably will follow, but I haven't really decided yet. Or I wonder if we're finding it difficult to respond to Jesus because all we're seeing is obstacles between us and him and we don't quite know what to do with them, don't quite know how to move them out of the way. How's your response been? Just pause for a moment while I take a couple of sips of water and have a think about that. You know, it's important actually that we do pause and think about where we've been so far in this teaching series. Because if we don't, then I think it's going to be pretty hard to move on properly from where we've been so far. You see, over the last few weeks, we've been thinking about come, follow me, that initial invitation. And as we move on deeper into this teaching series, we're going to move more away from like an initial invitation focus. And we're going to come to more of a place which is going to have us thinking about, okay, Jesus, well, I'm here with you. I'm doing my best to follow. Now what? What does this all mean? What do you want this to look like? How is this going to feel now that I'm following you? And as we begin to do that today, I want us to think about how our lives need to be fully devoted to Jesus. We're going to be thinking about that again over this next little while. We're going to think about what it means to be constantly faithful to Jesus, to his way of life. That's what's coming in this teaching series. We're going to be thinking about where our hope is in Jesus. But our starting point today helps us build on that initial invitation to follow. And as we hear Jesus saying to us, be fully mine. Be fully mine. Don't be hesitant. Don't be obstructed. Be fully mine. And I'm going to read the passage again. We've heard the passage read to us in the video clip already, but I want us to read it again. I want you to follow in your Bibles, please, and notice the words that are there, not just gloss over them. And this is John chapter 13. I'm going to read the first 17 verses and pick up here the sense of what Jesus is doing as he is demonstrating to his disciples that he wants them to be fully his and he fully with them. So John writes, it was just before the Passover feast. Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. The evening meal was being served, and the devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot, son of Simon, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, he took off his outer clothing and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? Jesus replied, you do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand. No, said Peter, you shall never wash my feet. Jesus answered, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. And then Lord, Simon Peter replied, not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well. Jesus answered, a person who has had a bath needs only to wash his feet. His whole body is clean and you are clean, though not every one of you. For he knew who was going to betray him, and that was why he said not everyone was clean. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. Do you understand what I have done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you should also wash one another's feet. I've set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. I tell you the truth, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you'll be blessed if you do them. And so, Lord, as we get into your word this morning, then will you help us to use this time to keep responding to you?
to be the ones who are ready to follow, not hesitant, not obstructed, but Lord, dealing with those things and actually following you fully, being fully yours. Father, help us to see in your word here all that it is you're inviting us to and all that it is you're asking of us. In your name we pray. Amen. So two things that I want us to notice from this particular passage, and then we'll think about our response together after that. You know, it's in his reactions to what Jesus was doing that we see Peter demonstrating so readily, don't we? His limited understanding of all that was going on. And it's in those same actions of Jesus that Peter's response is totally sideswiped by the fullness and the depth of the love that Jesus explains he's demonstrating here. So first of all, to be fully with Jesus, to respond to that be fully mine invitation, we need to make sure that we're not limiting our understanding of what it is that Jesus is saying to us. We need a bit of a quick catch-up in the story, as it were, because we've taken a massive leap forward in the ministry of Jesus from where we've been looking over the last few weeks, from the come follow me statements of Jesus to where we are now. There's a lot that's been happening. Jesus, first of all, has been unsettling the powerful people of the day. He's taught in places where the religious leaders of the time would only normally have been there teaching. And his gospel message of salvation by faith in him, worked out through God's grace rather than a legalistic observance of rules. Well, that message is getting people's attention. People have been hearing a different kind of message to the one that they're used to hearing, haven't they? One that's more appealing than they've been taught before. It has a whole different kind of feel to it. It feels more inviting, more welcoming, more inclusive, more embracing. And those who have been losing face because of all of that, the leaders of the day, they haven't exactly been happy with Jesus. And he's been questioned and warned on more than one occasion, but he's kept going. And so he's kept teaching all of God's ways, hasn't he? Through his life, through his example, through his words, through his actual teaching. He's kept healing people. He's kept performing miracles. He's kept drawing attention to himself by the way that he's been doing these things. And people are realizing that actually it's in Jesus that we have this fulfillment of God's promise of love for them. And you know, after all that's happened so far, there really shouldn't have been any misunderstanding about what's going on. But if you just turn back to the beginning of John 12, just very quickly, you can see here that we've got, partway through John 12, verse 12, we've got Jesus coming into Jerusalem. But, you know, not all of the cries in the crowd that day were words of Hosanna and cries of blessing being given to Jesus as he came into Jerusalem. They're the ones that we have recorded, aren't they? Hosanna, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Blessed is the King of Israel. Not everyone was shouting those Hosannas, though. There shouldn't have been any misunderstanding. And listen, there shouldn't have been this level of misunderstanding amongst Jesus' disciples. They were struggling to understand the fullness of all that was going on around them. John tells us that in chapter 12, verse 16, that even the disciples didn't fully understand what was going on. And they wouldn't do until after Jesus had been crucified and risen to new life. Even those who've been closest to Jesus haven't fully grasped all that they could have done. Do you know, I find that quite encouraging, really. Because in those moments when I'm just thinking, do you know, Lord, I'm just not getting it at the minute. Don't understand what you're doing, what's going on. Then we read these words again, and somehow there's an encouragement there for us to realise that we're not perfect people. We might have times when we don't get it, we don't understand, we don't know what to do next. But God knows, God's right there with us through all of it. And then we come to chapter 13, and here we see the reality of this limited understanding being worked out through these words that I just read to you. In the opening verses, it's John who's setting out the context there, isn't it? It's the time of the Passover feast. Jesus has gathered with his disciples for a meal at that time, and there's nothing especially unusual in that. Jesus would have spent time over a meal with his disciples on many occasions before. But just look carefully at verse 1, chapter 13, verse 1. John is here waving a flag at us. He wants everybody to notice what he's saying and explaining, really, in verse 1, everything that's coming in the rest of chapter 13. He's there waving this flag at us, making sure that we realise that what's going on here is about Jesus demonstrating his love so fully, so completely. And still in verse 1, John wants us to realise that what is coming, everything that's coming, comes out of that. Comes out of that incredible depth of Jesus' love for his disciples. He tells us that right at the beginning. So we're the fortunate ones, aren't we? We know right at the beginning what's coming and why it's there. We know right at the beginning what this is going to be about because John tells us that. But the disciples didn't know that. They were probably quite preoccupied maybe with the thought of gathering together for a meal, and maybe they didn't give a thought initially to what Jesus was going to be doing. But there he was, Jesus, with his basin of water and a towel. More than that, though, Jesus is there getting himself ready to do something unexpected, to work in a way that would have just been, you know, totally unexpected. You see, foot washing was a common part of this first century Jewish culture. It was part of their daily ritual for cleansing as a religious act, as well as a token of politeness and hospitality. You know, this was a world of dusty road and sandals where the Christians of the time didn't do the hideous thing that happens now and wear socks with their sandals. Don't know why we do that. I have to say. I don't know why people do that. People walked everywhere. They got dirty feet. And when they gathered together for a meal, it was their custom, it was their ritual of hospitality and religious observance in certain circumstances to wash their feet. For some reason, though, it seems that on this occasion this may well not have happened. And so Jesus got up to do something that would have been considered to be so degrading that it would have been left to the lowest of the slaves. John's told us why he's doing it. Jesus is demonstrating his love for his disciples. He wanted the best for them. He always wanted the best for them. Jesus always wanted the best for his disciples, didn't he? He always wants the best for us, his disciples now. And so in the context of this meal, the best thing that he could do for them, the way that he could show them his longing to give them his best, was to kneel down and wash their feet. Nobody was prepared for that, were they? In that video clip, it showed it so well. The look on the faces of the disciples. They weren't ready for this. They weren't expecting this to be happening. You know, the disciples could have washed their own feet. We don't know why they perhaps hadn't on this occasion. Maybe they just couldn't be bothered. They were feeling too lazy. Maybe they were just expecting too much of other people all the time. But Jesus doesn't care about that. He's not concerned that these men were content to be doing something other than the best that he could have been doing. Jesus got up in that moment to deal with a situation that he knew that he could make such a difference to. And he could do that by demonstrating love for those around him in ways that they didn't understand, ways that in that moment they weren't expecting. And all of that misunderstanding is so skillfully highlighted by Peter, isn't it? He's having none of it. We know the story well, don't we? Peter is having none of it. Even when we get to verse 7, where Jesus has gently tried to explain to him that there's more going on in that moment than Peter has realised, and that Peter just needs to trust him and let Jesus wash his feet, even in those moments, Peter still is having none of it. What is Peter doing? You know, what Peter is doing here contrasts so completely with what Jesus is doing. Jesus is demonstrating his love, trying desperately to demonstrate the completeness of his love for his disciples. But here's Peter, perhaps being a bit dense, we might want to argue, especially after all that he would have experienced with Jesus up till now. But you know, more scary than that, here's Peter, perhaps unbeknowing to him in one sense, but here's Peter trying to reject the fullness of the love that Jesus is trying to give him. Why would we want to do that? Why would we want to reject the fullness of the love that Jesus has for us? You know, there's a serious level of misunderstanding going on here. Peter is trying to limit the ability of Jesus to get through to his disciples just how much he loves them. They'll get the message loud and clear the other side of the cross when their risen Lord stands before them. But they surely could have got that message now. It could have happened here too, couldn't it? The lack of understanding going on here was so unnecessary. They could have experienced so much more of Jesus than they were letting it happen. But listen, don't do that. Don't limit the amount that Jesus is loving you and longing to bless you with. Just think back to what we were looking at last week when Jesus was there getting rid of the obstacles. Telling his disciples to stop it when they were preventing people bringing their children to him. Jesus was there encouraging, wasn't he? A childlike trust that just comes to him and learns with him as we go along. Doesn't let anything get in the way. Yet here we have Peter who felt so restrained, so held back. And he needed more help to understand properly what was going on. And it's in the second half of the passage where that comes. Jesus sets about doing what he does here out of love. And he sets about trying to explain that to his disciples. He says to them, look, see the full depth of the love I have for you. You know, there are all kinds of things that will affect our responses to love. Our experiences of love in the past may well influence our ability to show or receive love now. What's going on in our lives today and how we respond to that is going to affect our attitude to love. We might be fearful even of what might happen if we let someone love us. Will it all be okay? And if we try to love someone else, will they welcome that or will we be rejected? There are all kinds of things that can go on, aren't there, that will come into play to affect how well we can embrace the full depth of love. But you know, Jesus doesn't seem to have any of those issues here, does he? Doesn't seem to worry about any of those things. And there are a number of clues in the text that we have that reveal that to us. So look at verse 10 just quickly with me again for a moment. Jesus tells the disciples that he knows that not all of them are clean. And that's explained in verse 11 where John tells us that Jesus knew already that one of his disciples would betray him. Jesus knew that already, didn't have a problem with it. It didn't prevent him, it didn't get in the way, it didn't stop him from coming and washing the feet of all of the disciples. I wonder what we would do. Would we risk loving someone even if we knew that they were going to be the ones to kick us in the teeth later on? Would we do that like Jesus is doing here in verse 10? And then in verse 12, Jesus already knew the answer to the question he asked. He asked them, do you understand what I've done for you? He knew the answer to that, didn't he? Jesus knew they didn't understand. Jesus knew that they didn't actually get what he was doing by washing their feet. But look, he did it anyway. I wonder how we compare to that. Do we only do the loving thing if we know ahead of time that the person who's going to be on the receiving end of it is getting what we're doing and is there ready to praise us and thank us? Do we only love people like that? Is our love conditional? And then verse 13. It seems as though the disciples are getting praised for rightly calling Jesus teacher and Lord. But actually behind that statement, there's a whole load of stuff going on. Behind that statement, there's an awareness in Jesus that them saying it and doing it properly are completely different things. So what about our relationships? Just think for a moment of the relationships we're blessed with in our lives. Relationships of husband, wife, father, mother, brother, sister, grandparent, friend, colleague, whatever we would add to that list. Do you know, it's so easy to give a long list of titles of different types of relationships we have with people, isn't it? And it's even easy to know what the right answer is when someone asks us, so, you know, what are those relationships meant to be like? What are they like? We know the right answer, but I wonder perhaps sometimes how different our living that out is. Whether we live it out as fully and consistently as we might. Well, that's perhaps a whole different thing, isn't it? I have no statistic to quote you to prove this, but I reckon that we hear more negative things said about relationships than we do positive. We hear more comments about relationships that have struggled and then perhaps ended than we do about those that have persevered and made it through. And Jesus faces all of these things. He knew about all of them ahead of time. He knew there was one there who would be betraying him. He knew that what he was going to be doing was going to be misunderstood. One of the disciples, like I've just said, would betray him. Others would run in different directions when the going got tough and Jesus moved closer to the cross. One of them would promise to stay with Jesus no matter what, but then deny him three times under pressure. Jesus knew all that was ahead of him, but look, he's still here. Jesus still showed them the full extent of his love. This is an incredible passage to get our heads around. Jesus knew ahead of time how things were going to be. But he still did it. In total humility and grace, Jesus knelt down and washed the feet of the ones who would soon respond to that incredible demonstration of love and acceptance so badly. So what kind of response to this act of love from Jesus would we have made? What kind of responses are we making right now? And well, in the last few verses of the passage, we're going to look at this invite for us that's there to respond to Jesus fully. We need to live fully with Jesus. Not hesitantly, not obstructed, but fully. Let's look at some of the text first of all, and then we'll work out how we can respond to it for ourselves. And in verses 14 and 17, Jesus gives instructions. Verse 14, he says, "Now that I have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet." And then verse 17, "Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them." I don't think Jesus meant that they should literally keep on washing each other's feet. And only that. I don't think that Jesus even meant that they should go to other people and randomly stop them in the street and give their feet a nice little clean. I don't think he meant that either. But he was talking about following his example completely. "Now that you have seen the things that I do, you'll be blessed if you do them." Jesus meant everything. Maybe that could have included the foot washing, but let's not get stuck into that one. Jesus meant everything. Jesus was saying to his disciples, "Listen guys, you've seen me act in humility. I didn't ever put myself on a pedestal, but I have knelt at your feet. I don't hold my authority over you, but I've showed you that I love you. I don't leave any of you out, but I've treated you all as equals. Now go and do the same. Treat others the way that I've treated you." We need to catch a hold of that. We need to catch a hold of this, you know, humble, servant-hearted nature of Jesus and mirror that in our own lives as we live fully for him. How can we do that? Well, then Jesus gives a second instruction. If we go further forward into the chapter in verses 34 and 35, we see Jesus saying, "A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." You know, it wasn't an option. It wasn't something that they could do if they felt like it, or only when they could be bothered. It wasn't an option. And there are no conditions set there. Jesus simply says, love one another. Do it completely. Do it all of the time. Do it fully. Jesus wanted his disciples to know his love for them fully. He wanted them to embrace it, and he wanted them to live with it as the thing that identified them as God's people. The thing that gave the identity to their community centered around the love of Jesus that he was showing them. And this wasn't a passive thing. This wasn't just something that people could sit around and listen to other people getting told to do, or sit around watching other people do, and everybody needed to be involved. Every single person needed to be actively involved with what Jesus was saying. Not just simply marvel over it from a distance and say, "Oh, how wonderful that is, but I'm quite cozy sitting in my chair here, thanks very much." Everybody needed to be involved so that a whole community could be transformed by this identity of love. You know, this need to be this loving community that Jesus is encouraging his disciples to embrace here. It's just so relevant for us today still, isn't it? One commentator says this: "Jesus' new commandment to love one another as I've loved you, Jesus' new commandment is a challenge to us to examine how we live as Christ's followers and how we demonstrate the quality of love he extended." But you know, here's a challenge for us, because it's an alien concept for people to live like this who don't know Jesus, those outside the church perhaps. Acts of loving kindness that are motivated by nothing other than genuine care and concern for people are so rare that they get treated with suspicion, don't they? Such profound expressions of love are scary to people who've never experienced that in their lives. We need to understand that, because otherwise when we try and love people and we get confused by their response, then we're going to get discouraged and then we're going to retreat and we're going to stop trying, aren't we? But we need to understand that this is all challenging, but listen, it's never optional. Never once has it been optional for the church to love people in the way that Christ loves his church. We need to examine then how we live as Christ's followers, how we demonstrate the quality of love that he's extended to us. Because this is what Jesus has asked us to do. Jesus has asked us to look carefully about the way we live. And he's invited us to live fully with him. You know, the single most important characteristic of the Christian life and the distinguishing hallmark of this community of God's people that we call church is that we let the love of Christ flow through us freely and completely. We do that through the power of the Holy Spirit, a power that takes that love and lets it shine out through us in a way that points people to Jesus. Not to us, but to Jesus. You know, for us to be that kind of community as church is only ever going to happen. It's only ever going to be fully possible if, first of all, we ourselves accept the love that Jesus is inviting us to embrace. We're not just talking here about a love and acceptance that we need to show to others, but we need to be able to let Jesus love us ourselves. If Jesus could love Peter and Judas, even though they would let him down in their own way, why would he not love each of us? So I wonder, as we begin to think about how we'll respond to this morning, I wonder, are we ready then for the fullness of the love that Jesus demonstrates so readily and that Jesus is holding out to each and every one of us? Don't let anything hold you back from that. Don't let any of those supposed norms of society that keep you away, that might keep us away from Jesus, to do that. Don't let them get in the way. Don't put anything between you and Jesus. No obstacles, no barriers. Just you and Jesus, clear sight of him and his love for you. We need to hear, every one of us, we need to hear Jesus speaking clearly over us, his words of love. And we need to realise that as Jesus is doing that, he'd be the one still kneeling at our feet, wanting to be there to cleanse us, to heal us, to restore us, to have us know life with him fully, to have that affect every relationship that we have with other people, all because Jesus has given us that gift, his gift of love and life that comes through him and him alone. And so we can come to Jesus. We can do that now. Come to Jesus now. Know that certainty of love of his that's embracing you. Let it fill you with immeasurable worth. Come fully to Jesus and know his love for you. And Lord, as we do that, now, and as in a moment the musicians begin to play, if you come get ready please, that'd be great. Lord, as the musicians begin to play, and we see some words of our next song on the screen that we're going to sing, and then, Father, help us to just pause here for a moment to look at these words, to think about all that Jesus was doing in that moment, this passage in John 13. Think about all that's going on there. And, Father, have us come to you with integrity, with sincerity of heart and mind, as we give ourselves to you fully, Lord.